You are listening to That's What I Call Marketing with your host, Connor Byrne.
Welcome to That's What I Call Marketing, the podcast where you will hear from the leading lights in the marketing world and listen to their unique insights. Don't forget to rate or review this episode and the show wherever you're listening or watching. It really helps us reach and build on this amazing community of engaged marketers just like you. And if you are interested in getting involved with That's What I Call Marketing, our sponsorship kit is now available on our website, thatswhatIcallMarketing.com/sponsor. And we are looking for you to come aboard as well around our Cannes content. So if you would like your agency or brand to have a presence at Cannes 2024, along with That's What I Call Marketing, get in touch today about a really exciting opportunity. Now, I know what you were thinking. Connor, what is going on? You have totally thrown my week. I wake up every Tuesday morning waiting for the latest episode of That's What I Call Marketing, and this week it wasn't there. Well, first of all, sorry for throwing your week into total disarray, but there is a very good reason for that. Today is a simul drop. I'm not even sure that's a word, but basically, along with the Sleeping Barber podcast, we are both releasing the same episode on the same day, and it's a new series called Mindless Marketers. So along with Mark and V from the Sleeping Barber podcast, we take inspiration from the cartoons of Tom Fishburne and talk about the hot marketing topics of today. And I will let V do a much better job of explaining that as soon as we hear a quick word from today's show sponsors.
Today's show is supported by the Indie List, the leader in providing you with easy access to hundreds of highly experienced marketers quickly and cost effectively. Visit theindielist.ie to speak to the Indie List team today.
Are you facing the maze of global expansion? Diplomat introduces the Diplomacy Model, a cost-effective, innovative approach to navigating the complexities of your brand's presence in international markets. Visit diplomat.agency.
If you would like to reach an engaged community of marketing leaders, get in touch with That's What I Call Marketing to discuss sponsorship opportunities.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for tuning in what we would consider a pilot segment. I'm V, and I'm joined today by both Mark Binkley, y'all know him, and close friend of ours, Connor Byrne, from across the pond. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, V.
I hope that pop filter worked on that. It's all good. So we've all seen them. We all love them. The Marketoonist cartoons by Tom Fishburne. And what originally started as a cartoon to co-workers back in 2002 has grown by word of mouth to reach nearly 500,000 readers a week, which is just incredible. Mm-hmm. And because of these cartoons, I think the three of us were somewhat inspired to bring them to life in some capacity and use them as a talk, as a way to just kind of take a moment and just really speak to what he's kind of portraying in a fun and kind of mindless way. So we're calling this segment The Mindless Marketers, and we hope that you guys enjoy this new format because I think we're going to have a lot of fun getting into it. So who's excited? I'm excited.
Definitely very excited.
Me. Hand raiser.
Hand goes up. Hand goes up. I love it.
It's always good for audio.
Yeah, it's always good for audio. the hand goes up again.
Exactly.
Thumbs up. All right, well, how are we kicking this off?
Well, I think Connor, we'll kick off with Connor.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So the first one I picked out, and it's kind of relevant given some news recently, was the cartoon you can see where we're going to scratch out the marketing role in chief marketing officer, and we've replaced it with chief brand, chief digital, chief commercial, chief experience, chief purpose, chief customer, chief revenue, chief growth officer. And, you know, of course, that title didn't work either. So any other ideas for a word that will magically fix this role? The dog tends to agree that we have a problem 100%. Here when we are consistently trying to, I don't know, like, is it reposition the role? And there's always news that's like that, you know, we're the CMO role is dead. It's over. It's gone. And you saw it recently with the news of Starbucks, right? That they have allegedly got rid of their CMO.
Oh, I hadn't seen that.
When you dig in a bit deeper. Yeah. When you dig in a bit deeper, it's not actually kind of what's happened.
Hmm.
The CMO has been promoted to CEO, and he's made a decision to actually then regionalize marketing under the regional structure of Starbucks. So when you go a layer under, now whether it will work or not, I don't know, but it doesn't mean Starbucks are getting rid of the CMO role. They're just regionalizing it.
Well, or maybe he thought no one could do the job as good as he did. So he's just like,
Yeah. I'm retiring me. Therefore.
My lineage ends here.
I am the best there has ever been. So good luck, people.
Put myself up on the wall.
But there is this consistent debate over the CMO role, and it's not valued. And it's like, I spoke to Sherilyn Shackle from the Marketing Academy about it. Yeah. And she's like, there's not enough CMOs on the board. And it's just, I sometimes think that we create the problem ourselves by doing things like this, by redefining the role and saying, we'll call it something different here.
Yeah. I think in some ways it's kind of like, the idea of rebranding and how dangerous that can be. It's like we constantly are doing it to ourselves and devaluing the thing that we had built before. And I think you're right. Even a lower level, not necessarily a C-suite, but there's digital ninjas, there's growth hackers, there's all these things, demand gen specialists. And it's like, how about just marketing? Like, just do that. Like, you don't have to reinvent everything all the time just because the channels change.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting, it's so funny because it's really only marketing that goes or has this problem.
Yeah.
I don't know of any other role in any organization that they're constantly trying to redefine what it is that they do, how they do it, how they measure it, all these things. And I think that's also the reason many organizations will look at marketing as kind of, dare I call it, like the coloring department.
Yeah.
Just throw them a bone time to time. Don't cut all their budget. Leave some of it. Because I feel at the same time, we don't do ourselves the favors like you guys were already articulating. And at the end of the day, when I look at this list that Tom's kind of put out there, brand, digital, commercial, experience, purpose, customer, revenue, and growth, the one that really sticks out to me is that shift that happened, I want to say a few years ago, that marketers became chief digital officers instead. Because it's implying what? Is that implying digital in terms of IT? Or are we just taking one part of marketing, the digital aspect, and then now throwing it there, making it seem like we're so close to the data now, we know exactly what we're doing. I don't know.
Yeah.
And even chief customer officer, I was like, I get it. So, we should be chief, but the customer should be central to absolutely everything you do as chief marketing officer. So just own that and don't change the name.
Yeah. And really the customer should be central to the whole company. it doesn't have to be marketing. It also reminds me of something you said once. I can't remember who we were talking to, but we were talking about metrics and KPIs. And because there's so many metrics and KPIs,
Hannah and Kai.
We use 400 KPIs. I think you made the point, if we have that many, there's a good chance we're not that confident in what we're measuring because we keep inventing metrics. And similarly, I think we keep inventing titles in the same way because we're maybe as a group just not as confident in the value that we deliver. And maybe part of that is because we don't clearly understand the role.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other
genuinely,
thing
I'd
is,
love to go on, V.
Go, Connor.
I was going to say, I'd love to hear from any CMOs that are no longer CMOs that have changed their title to one of these that disagree, to honestly get in touch and let us know, the difference it has made because, we could be all wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
The only thing I wanted to add to this is the idea of, things like performance marketers, right? And yes, that's kind of like my profession and what I do. But what does that actually mean? If we, at the end of the day, marketing is a performance channel because it's there to drive acquisition. It's there to drive sales, et cetera. Marketing in totality is performance. It's not just one part of it. And I think that's where, again, we try to really pick things apart and compartmentalize them and separate them, brand versus performance. And it's just all together, it's marketing. It's just marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. When ironically, calling it performance marketing was the best piece of brand marketing ever.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Such a good point.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I love it. All right, what's next?
Right. I'm up next.
Okay.
So for the listeners, just imagine a boardroom. You have five individuals and one of them is calling out, can't we just use artificial intelligence to manage our sales funnel for us? And in the corner of a room, there's like, I don't know, Amazon Echo or a Google, whatever it's called, a HomePod or whatever. And it blurts out, I found four places that sell funnel cakes fairly close to you. Yeah. I love this one because, first of all, when we think about AI and how it's become so prominent in everything that we do, but also how we literally engage with one another. And it's becoming a thing where we're just going to expect and assume that AI is going to be there for us. And I think the way I'm reading this as well is like, we have to be very careful in how we're using the technology versus what we want it to be versus what it actually is today. So yeah, I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on this one.
Go ahead, Connor.
I mean, look, again, it makes me think recently Sam Altman came out and said AI is going to replace the work that agencies do and creatives do. And like, I don't know, I can't see into the future, but I kind of struggle a little bit with that because like, can it get to great human insight? I think it can take away a lot of things that are like automated tasks, but it still requires human intervention. Like, you got to make sure you're putting in the right asks, the right prompts. And that's what I love about this cartoon, because it can spit out some really bad stuff.
Yeah.
If you just take
100%.
It and put it out in the world, like, you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's a good point. For me, it's kind of, I've heard this comment before that reflects this cartoon, where it's kind of like, I want to use AI. Cool. Mm-hmm. Where? Because to me, it's not artificial general intelligence. You don't use AI just like, I'm thinking of that movie Her, where it's Joaquin Phoenix is walking around. He's got a little AI companion with him at all times that you just constantly are interacting with, and it's guiding your life and all that kind of stuff. It's not that. It's at the stage we're at right now with AI, it's very specific. You have to direct it. And so it's not to the point where you can just let it be and it's going to generate campaigns from scratch, you know, with no prompts, to your point, Connor. And so for me, you know, having artificial as a replacement anyway for people right now, I think people have this expectation it's going to do a lot of things, but I don't, right now it does nothing unless you tell it to. And so, you have to like figure out what you want it to do. And then it comes back down to strategy, really, because then like it, you know, the Red Reef project, you know, a lot of 90% of client side people who write briefs think their briefs are amazing. 10% of their agency partners agree. So there's a whole still gap there around like, what are we telling it to do? And like, if we don't get the strategy right, you know, AI is not going to help us at all.
Prompt engineers rejoice. The future is yours.
And it's like very funny instant recently where I know, you know, an AI generated image had a kid with six fingers and, you know, it wasn't meant to, but again, it was like, you have to check it. You have to be sure that like what you're putting in gives you what you want the other side. And, it's like, it's great. It's so powerful, but it's, you have to, well, it needs us humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Completely agree.
Okay. I got one. Okay. So imagine a mountainside roadway. Your road is going around a mountain, and on the other side of the road is a cliff. Or it's a bridge. Actually, I thought it was a cliff, but it's a bridge. And there's a sign that says bridge out, but a car drives right through the bridge out sign, flies off the mountain. And it goes, we're data-driven marketers. And the GPS doesn't say anything about a detour. And so I just,
so good.
Yeah. I think that's a really funny one. I mean, just from your take, what do you guys think? Or V, why don't you start on that one?
Well, I think this, so for all the performance marketers out there, I think you got to put this on your wall, because at the end of the day, the data that we get from the Googles, the Metas of the world will always tell us that anything that we do in those platforms are the next best thing since sliced bread. I would caution that when we're overly reliant on data without really understanding the insights that come from the data or really taking a look at your omnichannel strategy and how they actually work together, I think very quickly you can become just, for instance, just investing in search because the data says that's what it is, right? So for me, this resonates on so many different levels. And at the end of the day, we have to be very honest and really... Actually, Mark, do you remember you pinged me in a small segment from another podcast, I think Perpetual Traffic.
Yeah.
And there was one question that they had, like, if you're setting up a new business, would you set up just doing search?
Yeah.
And the answer is no. But the way that these things are being positioned is to say that all you need to do is invest here because that's where the intent is.
Right.
The other half of the story is, well, how do you make sure you drive intent?
Yeah.
So I think for me, this is just be wary of all the data points, be wary of the KPIs that you're measuring, and just, again, make sure you're trying to take that 30,000 foot view and understanding how all these channels, how all your strategies come to life to bring together, you know, your campaigns or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on this one, Connor?
You kind of mentioned it there, like these platforms will tell you that they're the best things and they'll give you a smorgasbord of data as well. Like, you know, just lots and lots and lots of it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what's the insight there? Like, what's it telling me? And yes, I know I can spend more with you because that's how you're built for me to spend more. And like, we've all spoken to Grace Kite recently and like, but Grace Kite was saying like, it's the stories behind the data. Like when you talk to her and Magic Numbers, it's like the people are more important or as important as the data that comes out. And so totally, it's like, it's understanding exactly what you're saying, V, like the story behind it. What's the insight? What can I do? What can I stop doing? Like there's so much in it. I love this because it's just like, you know, data says go left.
Yeah.
You know,
this one reminds me, you guys might've heard of this story, but there's a performance artist. I think it was in the UK. I don't remember the guy's name, but anyway, he took a red wagon and filled it with something like 400 cell phones, turned them all on and walked across a bridge and stopped in the middle of the bridge and traffic rerouted because they were sending GPS signals. It sent signals that there was a traffic jam on the bridge. He was standing on the bridge all by himself.
Yeah.
During the middle of rush hour.
So that is brilliant.
To me, it's kind of one of those things where you're like, okay, well, the data is telling us like there's a traffic jam here. Like we can't go there. And then you just react rationally to something that actually isn't real. And so like the data.
That's such a good example.
Yeah. To me, data and evidence aren't the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so
that's a good one.
There's tons of data out there. To your point, Connor, like every channel that you put anything into is becoming, all the pipes are becoming digitized. So even billboards and, you know, TVs and stuff now. And so there's more and more data than ever than we've had. And yet there's less and less answers, I think, and less insights. And so evidence, I think, can help a lot. The other part that I think is interesting about this is that, I think one of you guys mentioned something about it, but if you just look at your own data, it's such a skewed view of the world. Like you have to look at your own data in context with the competitor sets and that kind of stuff. Because like you can convince yourself that you're doing really great things or really terrible things really quickly if you don't look at the context of the landscape.
This is a pilot segment anyway, so I'm going to wing it. So I'd love to hear your guys' take on this whole shift on the nurturing of first party data because of the deprecation of the third party cookie. And how do we believe that actually that's going to affect us marketers moving forward? I have my own opinion, but I'd love to hear what you guys are thinking.
Do you want to go first, Connor?
Oh yeah.
No, you go. You go, Mark. And I'll agree with you.
Yeah.
He said.
For full transparency, I'm probably not the best person to answer this, but I'm going to answer it anyway because that's you asked the question. Because I'm not sure that I totally understand it all, to be honest with you. In general, though, I think we've been kind of like duped. And I spent a lot of time running digital. I spent a lot of time running performance, like managing millions of dollars performance media over a decade or so. So like, it's not that I don't know anything, but I think we were led down a path to believe that we could track and view everything down to the individual movement of a person and the moment by moment desires of that individual. And led to believe that was the path to success. It's not. And I think that, and I know that it's not, because I've been in these meetings where I've been reporting on, here's how all the great stuff we've been doing. And they're like, yeah, but did it work? And so, you know, there's different things that matter to businesses than just cookies. And what they care about is, are we getting incremental lift? Mm-hmm. They don't really care about the cookie part. We get obsessed about the cookie part as marketers, especially performance marketers. And we look at spreadsheets and go, oh, this ad campaign or this particular like keyword and this particular right. message is driving all the ROAS, all the return. And we believe that that's true when in fact it's not. And so to me, I think this is actually going to be a great moment in time for marketing, because getting rid of the cookie was blinding us. Getting rid of it is actually, I think, going to help us refocus on things that matter.
I'm just really interested in that. Like, you actually think it will refocus us, or reset expectations maybe?
Who knows? I mean, there's going to be a lot of people that go, I built my career on performance marketing and like spreadsheet marketing, which is dependent a lot on individual third-party data, cookies, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so there'll be a lot of resistance to, we need to replace it with something. But I genuinely think there'll be an awakening with a lot of other people going, huh, right, maybe it wasn't doing all the things we thought. So now what?
So I'm going to tie this back, because I just realized that my second cartoon that I had selected, I'm calling an audible here, gentlemen. Here we go. Imagine again, another boardroom, there's six people, and one of the professionals calls out, how are you going to target relevant ads after cookies go away and we can no longer rely on sketchy third-party data no one of us trusts? So when I think about this cartoon, Mark, what you were just talking about, what first-party data is supposed to meant to do is help nurture some of those larger, broader audiences to help find similar signals, et cetera. The biggest reliance, though, is going to be on those remarketing pools. I would argue, based on what we've learned from a marketing perspective, what are we always trying to do? Is target the largest possible audience. I think we will come to a point where we'll realize that the remarketing side, I don't want to call it a fallacy because there is value in it, but it's not as important in generating net new reach to drive long-term business results. And you can use the traditional remarketing side through things like one-to-one marketing instead, push SMS messages, et cetera, and really kind of cater those channels for that level of, dare I call it, like personalization. So I think we will come to a point where we'll realize that it's not about those remarketing audiences as much anymore. It's more about mass reach. And where I think then, at that point, our first-party data is going to be used a lot differently than what we're trying to replicate what we were doing with third-party cookies. Because we won't be able to achieve the scale that we did previously, even though I don't think anyone really trusted it. And we were just going off.
Well, there's a lot of that too. Like, is he even showing up anywhere?
Right. So that's kind of my take on that.
Because that's the thing. When you read some of the stuff that, like, you know, maybe Augustine Fu puts out there, you know, you'd be highly skeptical of all of it. You're kind of going like, why are we spending money here at all? So, I mean,
Mark Pritchard at P&G this a few years ago cut a huge percentage of their digital and actually improved their outcomes.
Yeah.
I think in part because they didn't believe it was actually doing anything. And it turned out it might not have been.
They were right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been involved in that where we stopped spending on a lot of digital activity. And it was a necessity in some ways, but it taught us a lot. It taught us about we really got to see the reliance and dependence we had on it, but not in the right way. Like, it was really interesting to see it. And some of them were experiments and some of them were like, we're just cutting.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, I think the idea about third-party data in part is also like, it extends into so many areas. Like get into the idea, it lends itself to the idea of like, whoa, we can target all these amazing small niche audiences. And then we can do all kinds of one-on-one marketing. And so like, it leads you down a path of, in my mind, not really, you're focusing on a tree and not on the forest. And in most cases, to your point, V, reach really matters a lot. And you can get so fascinated by just the data, like the clicks and all that kind of stuff, because it's sending you all this information. It's like it's a positive reinforcement. Look at this. I spent all this money and it did all these, they got all these numbers. Like,
I paid for numbers.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, it is an interesting topic overall, and I'm living in it today, so to speak. So it's very, very prominent in the back of my head. But Connor, what was your second one?
Yeah, do we have time for it? Okay, so this is, I'll do a better job describing it this time. This is an emergency glass, so in case of emergency, break glass, and there is someone standing there holding a piece of paper with a phone. And they've broken the glass and they said, all that's in here is a memo to cut our marketing budget. Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Those memos.
Yeah.
Things are going wrong. Cut marketing.
Yeah.
It's and we've all been there. It is the single easiest place to find money to take off the bottom. You know what I mean? It just, like, you want to save money, you go up marketing, you can cut it. And then the problem is, it might even go back to the first one, is who's there defending, particularly the long term, right? Because it's a very short term action. You can take it, you can, you know, keep a board happy, you can keep investors happy, you can keep shareholders happy.
Yeah.
Because the numbers start to look good.
Yeah.
Totally.
But there's no looking into the future of it. Again, I've been there, I've seen it, and, you know, tried to help other people make the case for, you know, not cutting off certain parts of marketing that were going to just help the brand continue to grow over the longer term. It's a challenge, and it's a challenge every marketer it faces consistently.
You had a great, your interview with Grace was awesome. And you guys talked about that a little bit. Maybe just if you don't mind, just kind of giving your perspective, because I know you talked to her, had more time to think about it. But
yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, you know, Gracious the DJ is like
that was fascinating.
The biggest thing. And it was funny because I'd spoken to her previously and said, "Look, love you to come on." Like, it was probably maybe a year ago when it was like, really, are we in a recession? Are we in a recession?
Yeah.
And when she came to come on now, I said it may not be as relevant. And she goes, "Oh, God, it is. It's so relevant that, you know, marketers are facing the same issues now." And, you know, without selling her business for her, you know, she's able to talk about, you know, the impact of doing econometric modeling around the improvements and efficiencies it can make. And I think that's actually probably not the full answer, but part of the answer is actually kind of going, well, where can we cut? Because we may have to cut. So what would we cut? Where can we cut? And where can we actually get efficiencies? And that's a better conversation than break the glass and the money's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that I thought was interesting about that was like, you get, I mean, in all businesses, there's a reality. At times you have to cut expenses. Mm. And I mean, people get, V and I went through this last year. Well, I think, you know, it's a shared experience for all of us. Yeah. Individuals where you're a line item on a budget sheet. And so people get cut too. So there's a reality there. And so one thing I loved about her response when you were talking to her is that, okay, sure, we'll cut,
But give me a bit of time to figure out where is the best place to cut. Mm. And so in that case, you know, in econometric modeling, you probably need a little bit of an investment to help figure that out. If you've already done that, even better, because it makes things a lot easier to understand that.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a really good approach. Rather than just like looking at your performance marketing line and looking at your brand line, because, you know, looking at all the numbers, like Google's always going to say they're amazing. Facebook's always going to say they're amazing. Amazon's always going to say they're amazing. And so, you know, but they're not all driving incremental value to the business. And so understanding what's driving that is really important.
Yeah. And also, like, I think again, she talked about the data and the people and the stories, but like not letting a spreadsheet ninja in and attack the budget, which is exactly what I saw happen. Like use the insights and knowledge of the team that's in place, whether it's, you know, in different countries or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I've seen the opposite where people just go and say, like, you know, well, I just look at the numbers and that's where, you know, because people are smart, people understand, and people go, like, actually, well, there's the sacrifices I would make, and here's the reasons why. Like, you have to trust people.
What's your take on this one, V?
You guys really covered them. Honestly, if we look at it from a practical perspective, the reason our budgets get cut, because it's on a spread. It's on a balance sheet. It's an expense. It's the easiest way to back to profitability for an organization, especially if it's a large budget, right? So from that perspective, I can understand it and I can appreciate where it may be difficult to, you know, go cut in operations, go cut in manufacturing, go cut in some other areas, right? I too also love the conversation you had with Grace and, you know, making sure that we as marketers can take that back versus having it cut for us is probably the most important thing where we can actually do that due diligence. The only caveat there is, anything that we should be doing strategically should be helping with that incrementality.
Right.
And if our strategies aren't doing that, incrementality and profitability. And if our strategies aren't doing that, I don't want to say we deserve our budgets to get cut, but we're not tied close enough to the business.
Yeah.
And the outcomes that it needs to drive.
Yeah.
Well, so
just to that point, I've done something before where trying to get ahead of this, and with the team, I'd say, well, let's cut 25%. If we cut 25%, what would we cut? And typically, like 90% of that 25% is really easy to cut. And then the question is, well, why were we doing it in the first place? So even as a pre-exercise to get ahead of it, it's really worthwhile doing, kind of just, you know, because, you know, it tends to come.
Oh, it always comes. And always comes in Q3, Q4.
your end.
Yeah. There's also, I think, in that it opens up anytime something like that happens, it opens up an opportunity for a conversation. So in a lot of ways, I think it's great. It's better to see it as an opportunity than it is, I don't know, a shot or like an attack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it creates moments of conversations that are maybe forced, but are valuable to start building relationships. Because you can understand better what, like, let's say the CFO is really interested in and why they're interested in doing that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to be just a command, you know, thou shalt. You can have a dialogue. Anyway, it may end up being a command at the end of the day, but still, like, but you've got
humor me at least with a
conversation. Yeah, like having it opens up a chance to at least talk about it. Can we just talk?
Yeah,
let's just talk.
All
right.
Okay. Last one I got is inside the mind of a consumer. So there's a couple of people sitting around a boardroom table looking at a slide deck that's up on the screen, and it's the picture of a customer's brain. And so inside the person's brain, it's divided into, oh, my husband, my kids, career, mom and dad, me, travel, sunsets, Fifi. I'm assuming that's a dog, home, friends, career. Yeah. And so there's all these things that are going around in the mind of this consumer. And then the two people in the boardroom looking at that picture of the consumer are going, I don't see our brand of pickle relish anywhere. And the other guy's like, that's inconceivable. This was a brand loyalist.
When I read that one first, I thought, like, I read it quickly. It was like brand pickle. I was like, is that like a brand onion? Like, it's there. I was like, no, it's a brand of pickle relish. Okay. So I've never heard of a brand pickle before.
I love this one again so much. And Mark, I know we released our latest pod this morning. It is Thursday, April 4th that we're recording this. Yeah. So put that into context for the listeners. But Ethan Decker talked about if someone is brand loyal to or has a, you know, a repeat purchase pattern for a specific product, they're probably a category loyalist, right? Not just your product. So they probably use multiple products right. instead. And I, when I saw this, that's the first thing that immediately came to my mind saying, no, they're just like in the category heavy buyers. Yeah. And I think when the other side of this, like we assume people care about our brands as much as we do, when in actuality, they don't. They don't think about it 24 hours a day, yeah. Or at least 8 days of eight hours in a day, the way we do for our respective clients or our businesses. But I think we also have to take and appreciate all the other things that are in that mind for a consumer. And at the end of the day, for us to create that distinctiveness or create mental availability, call it whatever you want. It's let's just go back to having fun, you know?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
What's your take on that, Connor?
What reminded me, somebody said to me, not in the context of this, but they were saying that, you know, people don't even think about other people for more than like a nanosecond, you know, yeah. So someone's like, oh, I'm worried what they think about me. Like they don't, they may think about you for like half a second and then totally. They're gone. So like, you know, you reflect that then in the world of brands, companies, organizations, like we just don't take up that much space. And it's, you know, so it is all like, it's all the stuff we all know. It's like, well, just be there when they're going to need to use you. And I agree with you. And I saw some wonderful work out of the UK this week for Weetabix, which is a cereal brand, and just come out with some really nice work. It's fun, funny, enjoyable, and like we just need more of that.
Great. Yeah. Like for me,
about you, Mark.
Well, I've been writing a couple of posts about this kind of a topic lately. I'm not sure why I was triggered to write it, but anyway, I have been writing about it. But like I went to a. I've been looking at it, getting a jacket. It's all about me, right? And so I've been obsessing about this jacket. But even in the day that I thought I was going to go shopping for this jacket, there was a shit ton of things that I was thinking about. And it just so happened, I'm like, oh, yeah, right. Here's the malls right here. I just go pop in there and take a look for a jacket. But it was in that moment that I decided I was going to go in, only because it was right there. And so... But the rest of the day, I didn't spend any time thinking about this jacket. So, you know, for me, it was kind of when I was like, oh, yeah, right. Like I, you know, as much as I've been obsessing about this jacket, I didn't think about it all that day. And then the things that made me think about it was like, oh, yeah, there's the store right there. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I have been looking for a jacket. And so it kind of goes back to that mental and physical availability thing. Like really, like just being there and reminding people that you're there. That you have jackets and that and being available, it's so critical because who knows when somebody's going to make a decision on making a purchase.
Right.
You know, yeah, like right. I'm not, and I wasn't loyal to any particular brand. I was just trying to find one that fits and it, within my budget.
Not big criteria. You know
no.
I, mean? I want to
yeah.
it and I can afford it.
Yeah.
And it probably had to be black, did it? Look at the two of you.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Naturally.
If you're listening to this, the two of them wardrobe coordinated.
Yeah. But anyway, it's just one of those things where I'm like, yeah, like, you know, to your point, it's not all about, you know, the objective isn't getting people to, you know, tattoo your brand on them. Like it's getting them, it's making it easy for them to find you and buy you.
You're making me feel bad for my Harley Davidson tattoo.
Right across your chest.
Totally.
You get an oil drop tattoo on the side of your face.
The episode you guys did about physical availability was brilliant because, you know, mental availability gets all the,
yeah,
the day and the lights or whatever. So I thought it was brilliant. Like, because it's so important. Like, whether you're a retail store or otherwise, it's, we probably don't think about it enough.
Yeah. And the other one I posted recently too, there's this, I was obsessing about customer satisfaction, which kind of relates to this, you know, brand loyalty and the idea of like tattoos and, you know, that kind of thing in terms of brand love and all the blah, blah, blah. But I looked at airlines, I looked at Canadian banks, and then I looked at, what was the other category? Grocery. And looking at revenue and comparing the revenues of all the major players in the market to their customer satisfaction scores. And the customer satisfaction scores across the board are flatline. Like they're around 75-ish percent. But there's a whole range of revenues for these companies. So like obsessing about, you know, brand loyalists and obsessing about getting people to be like, you know, tattoo their brands on you. And, you know, that's all they ever think about. I don't know that that's realistic or necessary at all in order to grow a company. So to me, it's kind of one of those, like, it's table stakes to do a great job at serving a customer. Like, that's just it. It should be like great customer experience is the standard today. Like, you know, and if it's not, then you'll notice. And so things like brand metrics, like, you know, like satisfaction, NPS, forget about NPS, but that kind of thing, are more about diagnostic when there's a problem as opposed to when you're doing really, really great things, in my mind. That's my soapbox. I'll get off my soapbox right now.
No. It's good. It's good. Well, thanks, guys. This was fun. First pilot test of the Mindless Marketers. We'll continue to tweak it. Listeners, I know we can be better, but I really enjoyed this. It's a great way to start the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
For us at least. Sorry, Connor.
Yeah, I'm ending out the day dragging myself across the line.
You're almost there.
You got this, buddy.
I believe in you. I know you can do it.
Thanks. I love your morning energy. There it is. Well, listen, thanks a million, guys. Enjoy this. I hope people enjoyed listening and let us know what you think.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you guys next time.
See you, everybody.
Cheers. I'm a huge fan of The Seaton Barber. Definitely check out their episodes. Mark and V always have great guests, and their smarts as marketers comes through in their conversations with their guests. So definitely do check it out. And of course, we will be back next Tuesday with another new episode of That's What I Call Marketing. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do rate, review, or like. It really does help us reach an engaged community of marketers just like you. So until next week's episode, for me, your host, Connor Byrne, thanks for tuning in.
Thanks to The Indie List for sponsoring today's show. Visit theindielist.ie to find out more.
If you would like to reach an engaged community of marketing leaders, get in touch with That's What I Call Marketing to discuss sponsorship opportunities.
Are you facing the maze of global expansion? Diplomat introduces the Diplomacy Model, a cost-effective, innovative approach to navigating the complexities of your brand's presence in international markets. Visit diplomat.agency